This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Nick Miles, and in the early hours of Wednesday, November the 3rd, these are our main stories. Nearly 100 countries meeting at the UN Climate Change Conference in Glasgow agreed drastic cuts to emissions of one of the most climate-damaging gases, methane. Swiss prosecutors charged two of football's most controversial figures with fraud, the former president of FIFA, Sepp Blatter, and the former head of UEFA, Michel Platini. And a four-year-old girl who disappeared from an Australian campsite more than 2 weeks ago has been found alive and well. Also in this podcast, the online challenges facing disabled people during the pandemic. An exclusive report from deep inside rebel-held territory in Ethiopia, but it's not in Tigray. And the strange musical talent we share with lemurs. On Monday, the key word at the UN Climate Change Conference in Glasgow was forests and how to save the world's green lungs. Roll forward a day and the buzz was all about methane. It heats up your home, seeps from rotting organic material and bubbles from the stomachs of cows, sheep and humans. But it's also a powerful global warming gas, 120 times more so than carbon dioxide and responsible for a quarter of all global warming. So a commitment from over 100 countries to cut methane is a big deal. President Biden said that it was one of the most important steps needed to control the rise in global temperatures.
It's one of the most potent greenhouse gases there is. It amounts to about half the warming we're experiencing today. So together, we're committing to collectively reduce our methane by 30% by 2030. And I think we could probably go beyond that. Today, it's approaching 100 countries that are signing on. And it's going to make a huge difference.
The methane deal follows a promise to combat deforestation. But Jo Blackman, a spokesperson for the campaign group Global Witness, said she was concerned about whether the agreements would be enforced.
What's really important is that they did sign up and hopefully we can use this momentum. But this is the problem with a lot of these commitments. There is an accountability gap. Governments made similar pledges in 2014 with the New York Declaration on Forests, but they didn't lead to anywhere near the progress that was expected.
Matt McGrath is our environment correspondent at COP26. So how significant does he think it is that Russia, China and India didn't sign up to the methane deal?
Certainly it matters that some of the bigger emitters haven't signed up to it, but it is a very significant deal nonetheless. It's been something that has come about very, very rapidly. It's only in the last 6 months that scientists have really pointed out just what impact methane is having in terms of warming. Possibly up to half a degree of the warming that's already happened in the world is down to methane. So countries have gotten their act together very quickly and have signed up to a relatively powerful statement to cut emissions by 30% in the next 9 years or so, which could have a big impact. And yes, you might think that actually not having Russia, a major gas supplier, China and India involved in it would be a problem. But a little earlier, I spoke to Debbie Gordon from the Rocky Mountain Institute, who's an expert in this area, and she felt actually it wasn't such a problem at all.
Russia, India, China are often slower to the table. They're big and complicated. I do expect that maybe China will sign on. That's a hope and an expectation that they will come to the table, but they're doing it on their own time. I'm not surprised that Russia hasn't come on, but I honestly think that if Russia wants to keep selling gas to the West and export gas to the rest of the world, it's building terminals to export its gas, they're going to have to come in line.
Matt, with all these issues, it's worth reminding people, isn't it, that the commitments made, there's no sanctions to make people actually cough up and do it, make it a concrete reality. How is it going to happen? How is it going to be made concrete?
It's all about peer pressure, Nick. The whole Paris Agreement is built on peer pressure, and so are all these side agreements. They are entirely voluntary, you're absolutely right. There is no policing mechanism, there's no big stick. You can't force countries to cut emissions if they like. And as we've seen with the United States, a new president can come in and undo the work of his predecessor. So there's a lot of things put on the sense that actually, you know, countries don't want to be seen to be the bad actor. They don't want to seem to be the bad guy in this global drama.
Well, farmers find themselves on the front line of this new war on methane. Alex Fleming runs a small dairy farm not far from Glasgow. He's trying to make his business more environmentally friendly by emitting less methane. He's been telling us how.
We are using, in partnership with with N2 Applied, we're using their technology, which is locking in the methane and the ammonia into the cattle waste. The easiest way to explain it, if the general public are around and they can smell, I'm sure they may know what the smell's like when farmers are spreading the slurry, which is a good food for the ground, for the crops. But they're locking the methane and the ammonia in, also eliminating the emissions, and it actually draws nitrogen from the air at the same time. So it's doubling the usable fertilizer in what is, in all purposes, a waste product that has a use realistically.
Do you think, Alex, when you hear all these conversations, and it's not just in the UK, it's all around the world, right, that they're talking about eat less meat, you know, reduce methane gas. Do you ever think that your way of life and also the job that you do as a farmer is something that may not be there in 20, 30 years?
No, I don't. And I would have to say I never consider that. We're all about, I suppose COP26 is all about saving the world. But I mean, to save the world, we need to feed the world. And I believe that farmers will always need to be here. Yes, there are actions we may need to take, but we will always be here.
Alex Fleming talking to Nuala McGovern. Well, Alex is just one of the billions of people across the world whose lives and livelihoods are being directly affected by the warming planet. But part of the problem for the organisers of big gatherings like COP26 is that many people simply aren't aware of them or the crisis they're trying to tackle. Peter Awoche is covering COP26 for the BBC African Service. He gave me an example of the problem.
Just a few minutes ago, I caught up with a Nigerian minister and I was trying to interview her about gas flaring in the oil-rich Niger Delta of the country and how it's affecting ordinary people. Anywhere you are in the Niger Delta, if you look up, there's a gas flare less than 2 kilometers away from you. And people have to farm their crops alongside these gas flares, fetch water from streams that are just next to these gas flares. So these people are affected. She said, I'm afraid I cannot talk about it. I do not know enough. So if the government does not know enough, how are they going to explain what these changes are wrought by global warming for the people? It's a very difficult question to ask. I've asked a lot of activists how much Africans know about climate change, something that affects them on a daily basis. Unfortunately, not enough of them know about it.
Peter Akwoche, and we will, of course, be bringing you continuing coverage of the COP26 conference in later editions of the Global News podcast.